This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded January 23rd, 2012. Episode 79, Ludibrious Luxating Layout.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
Happy Chinese New Year, Chris.
All right, I'm going to try this. Here we go. Xin Yan Kuai Le. Eh?
That's impressive. I am not even going to try that. So happy Chinese New Year, or as everyone else who's not Chinese in the hardware industry says, oh shit, we can't get our parts.
Yep, that's what Freak Labs posted on Twitter the other day. It was awesome. It's true though. I mean, like, it just shuts down. I mean, it's just gone for 2 weeks off the map.
You always forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. February, what's going on? Oh, no. And it seems like it gets longer every year, too, you know?
Yeah, I know. I think they're off for 12 days or something. A lot of companies are shutting down for, like, almost 2 weeks. And my PCB card has shut down, and I was ordering some parts from Alibaba last night, and they were shutting down. Oh, yeah, we'll happily take your order, but we'll ship it in 2 weeks' time.
You get it when you get it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was the site you're talking about? Alibaba? What's that?
Alibaba. It's a Chinese component sourcing website.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's huge. It's the Chinese equivalent of like an eBay kind of thing, except it's not really an auction site.
It's more like a DigiKey, but like a shady DigiKey.
But it's got all the different manufacturers. It's got all the different suppliers,
Any problems with it ever?
You get dodgy Chinese components, you know.
You ever get any bum ones coming through there? I mean,
I haven't. No, they've been pretty good, actually.
No, that's good.
So, yeah. Whether or not you're getting genuine parts is another issue entirely.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, some parts
so they work, but not necessarily
well,
with the brand
that's
listed
than others,
or whatever.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if it's an LED, your test is, does it turn on? If it's
an
Atmel, like 324 or something like that, you're a little more complex, right?
Yeah, exactly. Your offset voltage, you know, might be a bit dodgy over temperature.
Yeah.
Or something. Oh, boy.
Buy kits from EEV Blog, everybody.
It's hilarious, and but it seems a bit like, because you just started the new year, right? You're just back, and your project, you know, is back on schedule, and you got to finish the damn thing, and all of a sudden, bam, it hits you. It's Chinese New Year, and you know, you just get caught short, and you always forget about it. And Murphy's Law says it's, you know, when you need something urgent from your Chinese PCB manufacturer.
Yeah, and what I wonder is, I mean, eventually, because cultures continue to get intertwined, I mean, it's a cultural thing
as well.
Of course,
yeah.
But, I mean, eventually, you got to figure, if business is that entwined too, maybe someday we might be, you know, businesses might have off. I mean, freelancers such as yourself won't, but, large corporations that are dependent on it, maybe there's a significant reason for that. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, they shut down, but most of them I found always say, if you really have urgent needs, contact us and we'll charge you a buttload of money and we'll find some poor bastard who's willing to actually stay back over the holiday period and do your work.
It's like working over Christmas here. You can get it done.
Exactly.
But
same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the
best
idea.
You can do it. Oh, I've done that. You know, there I am, Christmas Eve, you know, 10 o'clock, working on my working on a work project because it's so mega urgent, you know, and the timelines are so ridiculous that.
Well, you don't have that problem anymore now with China, right? I mean, I saw your boards you just posted on Twitter.
Yes, I did. They turned up. I cannot believe this.
So what was the timeline there?
The date on my board of when I actually laid out the board was the 17th, and what is it today? The 24th
23rd,
here in Sydney.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 24th.
Well, it's 24th here in Sydney. So I laid out, I think I sent them away, so it's Tuesday morning here, and they just turned up on the doorstep, and I think I sent them to Circuit Labs in New Zealand, that's who I got them from, on Thursday afternoon, Thursday
evening or sometime on Thursday, I think. And I've got the boards already. It's like they do claim a four-day turnaround, but, you know, they were doing this special for me. Like, they know who I am and they, you know.
Well, they know you're going to keep talking about it no matter what.
They actually approached me to possibly do some advertising, I think it was, or you know, or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I said, hey, you know, I've got a new project coming up, and they suggested, yeah, we'll send you some boards for your new project. So they've done just that, and they're very nice.
I like it.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the red silk screen. That's always a nice touch.
Yeah, that's I don't think the red's not standard on their standard prototype service, which is through PCBzone.net. It's not through Circuit Labs. Circuit Labs is their more high volume. It's the same company, same fab, but you know, yeah, they just have different websites for different volumes. And their prices aren't bad. I think this one I got is 90 Australian dollars or thereabouts, I think, or is that 90 New Zealand, which might even work out cheaper. I'm not sure. I have to double check that. But that's not far off my original Chinese supplier's prices.
Per board?
That's that's only a one-off board. Whereas if you get, iTeed Studios for $85, those iTeed Studio ones, I got five boards.
This is just another proto.
Did send me four boards, but I'm not sure if that's just because they wanted to show off to me or whether or not you'd get four. So I'll have to clarify that. But
yeah, but still $90 for a proto, that's not bad.
It's pretty good, and they do it in 4 days. That's their claim turnaround.
How many layers? What's the layers of the...
Oh, it's only two. You know, it's only a standard two-layer board. Two layers. Yeah.
What about the limits? Is it 6-6? Six line, six space?
Yeah, it might be 6-6 or 5-5 or something like that. 0.3 millimeter hole, something like, you know, fairly generic type stuff.
Okay.
And the ones from IT Studios, you could say they're a bit better value, but I waited over a month for those, like 5 weeks or something. Right. Like,
That's the ultimate question, right? What's the cost of waiting? I mean,
yeah,
maybe...
well, exactly. I've lost all my enthusiasm for the project in 5 weeks. It's like,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've moved on to something else.
Yeah, and there's that whole spectrum of, you know, there's the slow boat from China, right? There's always that option, nice and cheap and slow, and then there's the even more extreme past, you know, a quick turn house. There's cut it on your own. On your own bench or whatever, if you can, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And there are significant costs with that in both time and, you know, cost of chemicals or the actual board cutter or whatever.
When you're talking about $100 for a board, it's not worth an hour of my time to actually do it at home, technically, right?
Right. Well, and especially if you've got, you know, any kind of component that needs, a semi-difficult soldering job, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if you want solder mask and you want plate through holes, and you know, the ones you make at home are, you know, pretty crusty, they can work, but you know, you solder your own vias, you know, both sides, put a little wire through. And
I was trying to sell my coworkers on getting a board cutter because I was looking at those LPKFs. I'm like in money spending mode. I'm looking at 3D printers. I'm looking at board cutters because, you know, like they suggest that, like, well, maybe a board cutter makes more sense than a 3D printer, which, you know, very legitimate argument. And the LPKFs, they're beautiful. I mean, they really are.
Nice bit of kit.
Yeah. And they even have, they'll cut your board, right? And they have 0.1 mil precision, but not accuracy. So that whole argument, right? I got that wrong, actually, and people corrected me. But the cool thing is now those things actually, they squirt out solder paste with an actual XY plotter. Yep. So I didn't realize they were doing that now. So it's not like the squeegee kind. It's just, you know, they drop a dot.
I've done a video actually reviewing one of those, like a $26,000 version of
really?
That. Yeah, that dispenses the solder paste. Yeah, they can be incredibly accurate.
That's fancy. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean,
that was 26 grand worth of kit.
If you got it laying around, might as well use it, right?
Well, yeah, that's right.
They're
neat. And then you can just place your components by hand with your tweezers and then shove it in the reflow oven, and Bob's your uncle.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Bob is
but
my uncle.
But you still don't get
the
plated through holes, which sucks. So, you know.
Yeah, I know. So, well, I think they claim they've got a machine which somehow does plated through in some way, shape, or form. Yeah.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah. So. Oh.
If only I had the dough.
Yeah, exactly. But,
right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I found that those things are really good. Like, if you're doing analog stuff, just to throw stuff together, because if you need, like, a ground plane, even just a surrounding ground, you know, like
of course,
a pour, you know, like, it's nice for that kind of stuff. But once you start getting into any kind of microcontroller, anything where you need solder mask, you're screw it, you know?
No, that's right. And speaking of solder mask, actually, and silkscreen, I mean, this board looks really nice from Circuit Labs. I'm really quite impressed. It's got a the finish is not gold or hot air level surface. It's actually silver. So it's a silver finished pad. Yeah, so it looks really nice. And the silkscreen looks quite nice, but it's not as dark as my one from PCB Cart. And if you see my little project, my little front panel microcurrent project, then the white silkscreen from PCB Cart is really dark and like it's one of those photo imageable, you know, silkscreen type. I don't know the various processes, but it's very dark, whereas the one from Circuit Labs is very sort of lighter and more transparent. So I don't know how it's going to go as a front panel. So as you'll see in a video, which I just edited last night and I'll upload, 1 hour, woohoo, for those fans of the big, it's a whole hour
long. I'm not
long
one of them. I'm a skipper. I skip around.
Right, yeah. Anyway, and you may have heard it all before, because I think once I got through shooting the video, I went, I think I've said all this before in my previous design for manufacture video.
Deja vu.
Yeah, slight. And of course, I'm not going to go through and edit it or just not upload it. So I may as well just upload it. Right.
You just hope that people forget.
Yes, because I, as you know, I want to make more of my little microcurrent project, right?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, up until now, I've just been making them, you know, they're hand-assembled by my guy in Melbourne. He, you know, takes each part from the DigiKey bag and he hand-assembles the things. And and it's okay when you're making 50 of them or something like that. But, you know, I want to make a few more than that this time. And I figure, well, I might as well bite the bullet. So I panelize my board. And now I want to get away from China. I want to make it local. So I was hoping that Circuit Labs in New Zealand could make it for me.
Look at this hippie. He's going all local. He's a locavore. Have you heard that term yet?
A locavore.
That's people who are supposed to like eat. They insist on eating local. They call themselves locavores.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a douchey term.
Right. Yeah, I got to admit, it's a pretty bad term.
I didn't mean to call you a locavore.
I can certainly agree with the concept. We try and get all local food.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. It's just calling yourself that.
That's a bit of a
or if you refer to yourself that way.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the third
I like the idea, though. I really do. I think, you know, supporting locally. And, you know, you and I were talking about that last night. You know, like people used to stamp. I mean, they still do. They stamp where it's made. Part of that's, I think, export export compliance. But it used to be very prominently displayed on the outside of stuff, made in the USA or made in Australia.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, they're... It's usually you got to pay a premium, but some people are willing to pay that, and I think it's admirable.
That's right.
You know,
well,
you know,
in my case, right, this circuit board, I can give you the actual figures, right? The circuit board from PCB Cart is like 1/3 the cost of the New Zealand one, basically, for a quantity of 200, I think. So it's 1/3 the cost. So I'd be paying 3 times the price. Basically, but that doesn't include postage. Postage from Thailand, they've upped their prices now. PCB Cart in China, so it's like
to keep
$50, you know?
Yeah,
$50 postage.
So, Happy New Year, inflation is rampant.
That's right. Oh, man. So, yeah, they've been slow. They used to be really cheap, and now they've really ramped
and
up.
And it's popularity,
prices.
Too. I mean, really, there's
it is popularity.
And scaling, and, you know, like if you start
to
buy
a point
more.
Where they were so popular that they couldn't keep up because they used to have like an 8-day. That would be their standard turnaround, 8 days. And they used to be able to meet that, but they've slowly been slipping and haven't been able to meet their 8 days. And they just got so popular. And I guess they had to up their prices to sort of, you know, stem that supply and demand kind of thing. So, well, which is a good position to be in, I guess. It means you're successful.
Yes, yeah, it is. But, now, here's a real question. How are you going to find Australian chips? Because I think you might be up a creek there, buddy.
Up the proverbial creek without a paddle.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to find resistors, right?
We've got one fan.
You have
fan
Alan
here.
Yates wire wrapping or wire wound resistors for you or something like that.
Yeah, Alan, get to it. Whip.
Yeah.
Quarter watt,
1%
tolerance. And I want a bunch of 0.1% tolerances too, so I want you to hold your tongue at the right angle while you wind them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I know. That's the thing, right? But I'm trying to do as much as I want to do as much as I can. Get the PCB assembled here. Try and get like a locally made or a locally sourced box, perhaps, like I do with the microcurrent. Get it assembled here, tested here. You know, at least do as much as I can.
Get government funding for the whole project.
Right, yeah.
Stretch the schedule by 2 years, hire thousands of contractors.
And then go bust.
Exactly. Well, no, you just run away.
Jump out with my golden parachute.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the way you do it, Dave. I mean, you've got to figure this out.
I've got it all wrong. Yeah, I'm doing it wrong.
That's fun, though. And I mean, maybe that's a legitimate, if that could be a legitimate use of, printed chip. I know that's a dead horse I'm dragging back out of the closet, but maybe even resistors. You'd see serpentine resistors sometimes. I've seen really high accuracy serpentine resistors. So there is a significant case. I mean, it would be very costly to make those, but it is more possible to make them locally at least because it's probably expensive to make them everywhere, right? So
let's not get involved in that. No,
yeah, we don't have to, but I'm just saying it's another use. So,
speaking of government funding, actually, I've got a little non sequitur story here, right? This guy I know, he's a Kenyaner, and he's setting up this website, and this really cool website where you can put all the information and it maps out all the canyons and all sorts of various things. It's really cool. But he's just got funding from the Chilean government, as in Chile. Chilean people out there if I actually pronounced it wrong. But he's actually got this government funding from the Chilean government, and he's moving over there for 6 months to work on his project. Awesome. Huh. It's like, the government are trying to entice people to come to their, startup companies to come to the country, and they'll help them out. So move to our country for 6 months, and we'll pay all your expenses. And I don't know what other catches are involved in.
That's an interesting point, though. Because, I mean, a lot of startups are can get localized funding like that, not necessarily moving. But even if you're a startup in Sydney, I'm sure there's funding of some sort, just local boosters.
Sydney, I don't know, maybe in Melbourne, maybe not perhaps. Sydney. Yeah, Sydney's very backwards, you know.
Yeah. Well, like when I was talking to that guy from the Cleveland Maker Gear, Maker Gear's that MakerBot competitor, And I was talking to him, and I'm like, you should really be looking for this stuff because Cleveland's got tons of foundations, and they want so many startups, and
really,
it's just like, blah,
Right, didn't want to go to Cleveland, is that the...
No, he's already here, that's the thing, he's already here, so why not get the funding since you're here? So if you're a startup out there, thinking about a startup, that's a significant funding source that I know Cleveland has it because I have another friend who's he's running a software startup, and he gets a ton of this funding. And it's usually pretty not many strings attached.
Okay. I was going to ask, what are the strings? Like, do they get a percentage of the company if you ever floated, or do they just do it for the, they just want to make use of public money?
I think it's not even public. Sometimes it's private, foundation money. Like the Cleveland Foundation.
Well, if it's private foundation money, usually there'll be more strings attached, I think.
No, that's the thing, though, too. It's like these are charities and like stuff like that. Like these are local. Like Cleveland Foundation is this huge foundation that tries to promote business and art and everything else, right?
Great
foundation.
Okay. Yep.
And so, but really, as far as I know, some of these, the only thing that's tied to it is, let us show off how awesome you are, right? Like people are applying for this, so they're only going to pick the best ones. But in the end, they just want to bring business here. And I know Detroit has a lot of programs like that. I was listening to a story about that.
Fantastic.
On the radio about that. So if you're thinking about a startup, look for that kind of localized funding because it's possible. And even if not that, maybe even national stuff because there's, STEM programs and stuff like that. There's a lot of – there is funding out there. It's not easy to get, but it's out there.
Yep. It's possible. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's great, though, your friend's doing that. And and Chile is supposed to be the hot spot. I mean, South America in general. It's blown up.
Right, in a good way, right?
Yeah, in a good way.
Okay. Literally blowing up and imploding.
No, that'd be bad.
Got it.
No, they're a growth area, just like Asia. I mean, I think they're kind of, like Brazil, I know, is slated to be the next China. I don't know if they already are surpassing China. I mean, at least in growth.
That's a big call.
Yeah. I think in growth percentages, though. I mean, and a lot of software is going down there. but just these really dense areas, you know, like Rio's huge, right?
Mm, and yep.
Can't say I know much about it.
Right, I think we're talking about our ass again.
It's hot. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there you go. If you can get funding, do it.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Speaking of funding, and we talked about PCB mills before, somebody pointed out, who is it? You've reorganized my... No, you haven't reorganized my list. Case
your list.
B on Twitter sent me a tweet, and he pointed out another, yes, Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
I know, yeah, they're getting a bit boring, but it's one of those... circuit board mills, you know, it mills out and looks like it's made of wood and it's got some accurate stepper motors and it's got some capacitive sensing system, so it gives you absolute relative positioning and like that. So, they haven't actually got much funding yet. I think two grand out of 30 or something. So,
yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a tough one. 30 grand is their thing. But why hasn't somebody done a MakerBot in quote marks and sort of taken these circuit board mills commercial? I know it's a much, it's a much more niche market. But it seems like every man and his dog's done a do-it-yourself PCB mill, right? But that's where it stopped. You know, they make a prototype.
Like an actual board.
An actual kit that actually works, or mostly works, or,
Yeah, because you're right. The stepper motors, like in a MakerBot, have to be, they're getting good enough resolution to probably do a decent enough mill, right? So
yeah, of course.
It's XYZ, that's all it is.
Yeah, I'm sure, and these things work. It's not a big deal. They do work. It's just a matter of putting the effort in to design a kit or a fully built unit that actually works for a reasonable price.
I think you pegged it with the market, because if you have a MakerBot or 3D printer, that has really broad appeal, like even broader
but
appeal
it didn't
than
when it started up, though. But
that's
I guess
true.
You could see that it had bigger potential, but it was, practically unheard. It was just a novel little toy for nerds, like a PCB mill would be. So
I don't know,
those
though.
Guys
I think
actually
if
took
you look
a chance
at the actual final subset,
seriously.
I think if you look at that final subset of like, okay, so how many people in the world would want to do 3D printing?
Oh, yeah, of
right?
course. Yeah, yeah.
Versus how many would want to eventually etch it on board. And then there's the whole...
I wonder if they thought about that when they actually did it. Did Bree and the other two guys, I think, who started MakerBot, did they sit around and go, right, there's X amount of people in the world and they're all going to buy a, X percentage are going to buy a MakerBot. Or they just went, well, we want to do it because it's fun. If it works, it works. If it fails, it fails.
Well, there's a couple stories out there about... I mean, they did a couple interviews, but I would think that they looked at... I know they based it off the rep wrap, so if you could...
Did they? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everyone saw how exciting the rep wrap was, and then it was taking that to the next level, right? And
right.
Yada, yada, yada. So maybe the first step for this would be as some kind of open source one just to start with, right?
Granted,
MakerBot is open source, but really you need like a fully open non-commercial project first, and then it goes towards the other.
Yeah. And one of my predictions came true that they would drop the kit, and now they have. This new MakerBot replicator is, you can't buy it as a kit anymore. It's a fully built unit. That was plainly obvious. So they've actually dropped the kit.
Yeah. Mm. And, speaking of an open source version of that, actually, that's actually one of the things in that open source ecology 50. I've talked about open source ecology
in here. Yes, is a 3D printer, yeah.
No, not a 3D. Well, yes, I think that is in there too, but
I think
actually a board mill is in there as well.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so I wanted to say thank you to everyone and shout out to everyone who actually did write in about that. We probably got about 7 or 8 people, and I was I was shocked, like reading the experience people were on there, and it was all like super relevant and people working on induction furnaces, and I'm just like, whoa. So
awesome.
our listeners are very cool.
They are.
I'm like reading, and I'm like, oh, I haven't done anything. Oh.
Wait, no, some people make you feel ashamed of yourself, don't they?
Yeah,
they just do so much work,
I know.
Put so many hours into it.
I should stop sleeping. Oh.
Yeah. Well, you're married now,
Yeah, that's true.
It's all over.
I sleep all the time now, 12 hours a day.
Right.
Chris, wash the dishes. on that same the same thing, actually, I talked to the guy running the open source ecology project, and he asked for a little bit more help from us, and I thought we might be able to help. They're actually looking for a project manager now for the whole universal power supply.
Right.
Basically, we supplied them with some domain experts, which is awesome. And yeah. But I know that some of our listeners are project managers, and I think some of them I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, if I was a project manager for 10 years, right, and I had this great experience, but I wanted to dig into something that was like really
meaningful.
Yeah, it gets back to like the Dan Pink book and talking about like drive and the purpose, yep. right? This is it, man. Like this is so. Anyways, I'm going to set up another Google form after the show tonight, and I'll put it in the show notes. Cool. But yeah, if you're a project manager, or even if you want to get if you want to get project manager experience so that you can show your boss someday and be like, look, I just managed this project, and that's a good way to get stuff on your resume.
You could, like, yeah, for sure.
You know, I talk to people about that, like people interviewing for software jobs. I'm like, well, they always say, well, I don't have any experience. Well, there's a lot of open source projects out there.
There's countless ones. Why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you get off your ass and show some initiative? Yeah. Yep. I'm going to hire the next guy who walks in the door that says he's done that. So
yeah,
too
exactly.
bad, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And I think aside from, you know, hobby projects that people can do at home for the resumes, I think there's a surge in open source hardware projects that, you know, as more people get, as the projects get bigger, there's more people that need to be involved and share the work rather. But
in fact, you can do most of them. I mean, some projects, you know, languish so far behind because there's nobody to work on it. And you can come along and contribute most of the effort to it if you've got the time and you've got the talent.
Or even just the time.
Right.
You'll figure it out, man.
Gain the talent later. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was a question on here at some point. I can't find it, but there's always that question of hardware projects. I mean, if there is the collaboration, or if you know, I forget what Twitter account it was, but basically it was a quote from iWoz, and it was basically Steve Wozniak saying, you know, basically you got to work alone.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if that's true with hardware. I mean,
I got to agree. I think he's right to a certain extent. And you know,
I think someone has to have a vision, right? I think
somebody has to run it and make all the decisions and be the dictator on the project. Otherwise, if it's designed by a committee, it's not going to work. So,
You could farm it out. So, say you were like a senior architect or whatever, you could always hand someone and be like, "I need a circuit that does this, this, and this. Go, come back when you're done, and don't come back until you're done." Rather,
right? I totally agree. Either you do it yourself, or you've got to be the dictator who. You know, end of story, I've said so, that's it, boom, and the project succeeds or fails based on your vision. That's it, you know. And
we've talked about actually how chips have been going that way too. Like, I think oh, man, 79 episodes, and I'm starting to forget them all day. They're all starting to blur together.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, right?
I just did a whole one-hour video. I forgot I'd done it before.
Yep. It's not just age. Sometimes it's just life, man. But yeah, there was I think it was like an Apple chip or something like that, where it was one guy driving the train, you know, like he was
As in recently?
Yeah, I think that was recently.
Like the Apple A4 processor or something? Surely not. Those things are so huge that
But it was like he was pulling in modules basically, so he was basically the architect, and then off to a verification engineer.
All right,
so,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Hmm.
Got it. Well, it's kind of like how we had Howard Johnson on the other week, and he was talking about the standards, you know, how to choose the new Ethernet standard. And I asked him, you know, did it come down to one or two guys with grey beards, and they stroke their beard and go, right, this is the way we're going to do 10 gigabit Ethernet. And he said, that's basically how it works. We, you know, we get, you know, the smartest guys in the room, and they make the decision, and that's it. End of story.
And everyone else is there for the resume, because they're head nodders, right?
Exactly. playing wank word bingo.
There you go. Oh,
boy.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and so that's how it works. And, you know, you're always going to be able to find examples where you can prove otherwise that a community-developed project is, you know, it works or can be really good or better. But I think they're the niche minority.
Yeah,
I think they're the exception rather than the rule. And talking in terms of hardware,
yeah, I've seen it where people split apart like schematics by pages, and then you still have an architect, but then you and in those cases, I think
those cases you could get it to work,
yeah.
Like my open source multimeter concept I had. You know, I could have dictated that I want this, and this feature, and then I could have, you know, had other people actually do the schematic for that part and that part, but, oh, you know, I don't know.
but you're not a project manager?
Yeah, and, you know, they might end up using some $50 chip that's going to kill the entire budget, you know? So there's lots of really right. intricate trade-offs.
When you constrain it that much, it's like, well,
yeah,
might as well just go do it.
Yeah, exactly. Might as well do it all myself, and yeah.
Yeah, because that's the key. I mean, I think the key with projects like that is you have to really constrain at the boundaries, like the signals. So if you have block A talking to block B, the important thing is making sure that the communication between block A and block B, your power between them, whatever it is, you need to make sure that's right. And then you can let designers go off and do block A
that's
and do block B.
Classic systems engineering, yeah.
Exactly.
And
I love
and
that
you can
stuff.
Put it, I've worked on huge projects like that where that eventually works, but it takes 2 or 3 years and, you know, it eventually you know, sort of limps its way out of the out of a prototype into production, you know. It's a very lethargic, iterative process with lots of meetings and lots of, you know, shouting and lots and lots of money wasted and time wasted.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. Oh, boy. Mm. The stories I could tell.
Well, if you want to, you're allowed to.
Ah, oh, right. Ah, oh, they're just too long.
Okay.
Told a couple of them before. But, you know, I've worked on projects, $10, $15 million that have just been scrapped. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no speaking of meetings and wank word bingo, I have a wank word for you. It's one of our favorites around here. The Internet of Things.
Oh. No, please, no.
Oh, yeah. There it is. That's it. But it's for good reason, actually. So TI released the chip this week. I think it was this week. It's kind of cool, though. It's a module, a completely self-contained module that lets you just put Wi-Fi into anything.
Well, that's what I'm doing with my power supply project at the moment. I'm going that route. I'm using one of these little WizNet modules, which allows you to put Ethernet into anything.
Yeah.
You know,
I love
instant
it. I think
bang,
it's a great
instant
idea.
Instant web accessed Ethernet. And it costs $19 or something for this module. And it's got the, you know, it's got the whole Mac in there and the whole thing. And it just converts serial SPI into web-enabled, you know,
oh, I didn't know you were putting that on there.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to put that up. Well, I originally added support for it, but then somebody suggested the WizNet. Ah, I've got one of those WizNet modules here.
Dave's kit is now $4,000.
That's right.
Don't worry, folks. Yeah. There's only 60% margin.
And I had somebody complain that, you know, it was that I was letting it end up being actually community-designed project, and it's not. I always had the thought to put that serial, any sort of serial capability in, or be it any sort of comms capability, be it RS-232, USB, Ethernet, whatever. So,
yeah, is it pretty limited always, going, you know, serial to Ethernet or serial to USB? I've always heard that it's pretty limited in terms of bandwidth when you get down to that.
It is pretty limited, but for something like a power supply, geez, it's not like you're transferring megabytes per second of data. Geez, you just
want
to set the voltage and 2.4. maybe read it back. You know, it's got two commands: set voltage, read voltage. You know,
that's
pretty much it.
And it's all done locally, all the control then.
Yep. So it's, you know, it's fairly basic. But when you can just put in a little dual 0.1-inch header footprint on your design that you can plug in one of these, you know, sub-$20 WizNet modules to give your product Ethernet capability, it's a no-brainer.
Oh, is that a module, though?
It's a module, yeah. You plug it in.
Dave, this is a chip that I'm talking about.
Oh,
so
right.
It's
I'm talking modules, basically.
I know. Okay,
which does
everything. Yeah.
Which means it's great, because then you could just put the footprint on your board for zero cost during development.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
And then if people want to pay extra, they can plug the module in. You know,
that's
whereas
true.
If it's chip level,
or you could sell it to them. You could sell it to them at a 200% margin, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, the upgraded version, right? Oh.
Yeah.
I always love seeing that when you're like looking at like a product catalog and you're like, what is that jump right there? And then they're like, oh, well, this version has 2 megs of memory, and this next version up for $4,000 more is 4 megs of memory. Really?
And it's already on there, but they just software unlock it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, bastards.
Oh, that's fun. I don't know. I think this chip's pretty cool, though. Like, all the software's integrated and everything.
Yeah.
It's all internal. Like, it's like 6K internal. It's pretty cool.
Right. Okay. So, and what does it do exactly?
It puts your stuff on Wi-Fi now instead of Ethernet.
Right. Okay, but what's the interface? Like, is it, does it convert, like, does it hook up to your processor in via SPI bus or parallel bus or what? I can hear you busily typing away there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're making me read now, Dave.
Yeah, well, come on. You're plugging this thing.
I know.
It's almost a chip of the week, and you're...
That's not a chip of... I didn't say chip of the week. I didn't say it. You said it. I didn't say it.
It's a chip, which we're discussing. That automatically makes it chip of the week, doesn't it?
Nah, I guess. Yeah. It's a chip, and it's this week. So
insert music. So, yeah, it's got, yeah. You know, that's what I want to know. I want to know the technical details, because if it's complicated to interface to, and, you know, then, well, it's hopeless, right?
Well,
but if it's got Arduino libraries or something and it's very trivial, it uses SPI bus, then, you know, way easy.
Yeah, yeah. And the key with that kind of stuff always is if you have to pull all that stuff internal to the processor and you have to, like, have a stack and then you have to have
an RTOS.
Yeah, you've got to
have software stacks. Blah. Yeah, exactly. No, that's too hard. And that's what these WizNet Ethernet modules do. It doesn't. You just send SPI commands and that's it. It handles the stack and everything else and the MAC addresses and the whole kit and caboodle and the web server and the whole...
Oh, it's got a server too? That's pretty cool.
Well, I don't know if it's a server, but you can actually communicate with it via the web, via a web page, you know, via a web browser. So
you can at least have a console within the web page and then send commands to it or something.
Guess what I got the other day, right? That was so cheap.
A puppy.
Oh,
okay.
For like $55 or $60 delivered or something. It was so cheap. It's one of these Wi-Fi enabled web cameras, right? And it's got like a pan tilt base as well, so it's got motors in it and it can rotate around 360 degrees. It's an infrared camera as well, so it can see at night, and it's all web enabled. It's Wi-Fi enabled, it's Ethernet enabled, and you can hook it up and it's got complete web based access, so anyone can go to the web page and then control your camera. So I'm going to stick it in the corner of a lab so people can come and control the camera in my lab and look and pan around.
Don't judge me, listeners, please don't judge me, but my first thought was creepers are going to have a field day with that one. People are just going to buy that and plug it in.
I think I'll have it automatically switched off only when I want to switch it on, will it?
Yeah.
Come on.
Just throw a t-shirt over it or something, right? Yeah, that was my first thought.
And it's got alarm outputs as well, like a little terminal block for alarm outputs. It does motion sensing in software built-in.
$60?
Delivered.
Man, that's crazy.
And it's got a pan tilt motor and the whole, the web in it, you know, you're just typing the IP address for it. Haven't got it fully configured, but I've got it talking locally. So you're typing the IP address, you know, like 196.1.168 or something. And then it pops up, automatically just pops up with the video feed. In there, it automatically pops up with the pan tilt controls and the zoom controls and everything. And you can set it to automatically record during certain hours and days of the week. And you can automatically set it to record when it detects motion, so like a security type system. It's incredible. You know,
that kind of reminds me of like a rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing, right? I mean, like that is enabled by cheap microcontrollers and cheap web
chips and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, exactly.
So how are companies making money on real webcams? Same thing for $200 from Logitech? I mean, like...
Oh, but they've got much better quality sensors in them. I guess this one's pretty crusty quality,
okay,
you know.
But I mean, eventually...
640 by 480, but...
Eventually, this stuff all comes down to a commercial level. Like I was talking to my wife about portable phones. Like, do you remember portable phones from, like, 15 years ago?
Yep.
Like, how expensive they were and everything. And she was asking, because we had bought her mom one, and I started explaining to her, I was like, well, it was like 60 for a set of five of them for around the house, and they're all and I'm like, I was explaining like the margins and stuff, and I'm like, in reality, for $60, those five phones and all the receivers and bases and plastic and everything, it was probably like $10, honestly.
Yeah, I know. And it's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, and that's...
Well, I just bought Nicole, my better half, one of these smartphones. It's one of these, it's the new HTC... I can't remember the name, but it's $150, right? And it's
even
got
without not the contract or anything. I mean, it's not
No. This is outright, right? Okay. It's $150 outright. It's only like a month old. It's just come out. And it's like their super low-end, low-cost smartphone, but it does everything every other smartphone does, except the quality of the camera in there is crap, right? It doesn't have autofocus in it. It can't scan barcodes up close. It can't do anything. But apart from that, it does everything an $800 smartphone does. Like,
so where do we go from here, though? That's what I was getting at, is like, if all these low-end manufacturers can do so much stuff, I mean, we talked about $100 tablets and low-end smartphones, like, what else do we need, really? I mean, like, that sounds really pedantic, right? Yeah. I mean, like, but, like, what else do we, where do companies go from here, right? I mean, like,
they just make more shit and they make it. They
I guess so, but like, do they need
more feature pack?
15 megapixel cameras on a phone? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it seems
I know.
Like the
it
value of companies is rapidly declining, right? And so,
but you can go into that niche market. Like, people will I'm surprised at the amount of people who will fork out for an $800, $1,000 phone. I won't do it. There's tons of people out there who might. And you can have a niche product where, oh, this has an absolute kick-ass camera and lens in it. It's handcrafted by nude virgins, and it's, you know, the best in the business, right? Yeah. And people will pay a big actual premium for that.
They will. I think this is part of what's actually pushing the open source hardware thing, though, too, because once it gets past the cheapo manufacturers, the one hung lows, as you like to call them.
Yep.
I think eventually it becomes cheap enough and even easy enough that, you know, hobbyists are not always that it has to be easy, but just that it's, why not, right? I mean, why not design a webcam into an Arduino or whatever else people are doing these days, right? I mean, so maybe that's just the next step. Maybe that's why it's surging like it is, because there's just this buildup of technology and it's good enough, right?
I mean, and it's good enough and it's so cheap. Yeah, it's
so cheap.
And yeah, because you're not going to pay. Like, I've heard before that the magic figure is like $300. Once a product gets below the $300 threshold, it becomes an impulse buy. I think we've even talked about that on here before, as usual. We've done so many shows. We've talked about everything, haven't we? And we just rehash shit. That's all we do on the Amp Hour.
We're just on repeat now.
Yep.
Me and Dave, actually, we're not even here.
We're not even here. We've just hit...
Yeah,
we just hit play, you know? So once they get cheap enough, it enables certain, you know, things to happen and certain markets to grow and develop and things like that. So,
yeah,
I don't know. But this $150 smartphone, you've got to be kidding me.
Right.
Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's other driving points like this too. I mean, there's another article on our list about low power, right? I mean, like, things are relatively low power right now, but they can obviously get better. There's always efficiencies you can get. But they're talking about, like, millivolt switching of electronics.
Yeah, well,
like noise switching, basically. That's what I think of, you know, like, but apparently that's what the drive is towards, you know, like, eventually. Yeah, yeah. Why with 5 volt? Why with 3 volt?
Yeah, I know.
0.9? That's so much. Why not go down to...
Your regular processor works at 0.8 now, or 0.75 or something.
Well, yeah, but like, there is there's zero, right? There's always zero.
And there's always zero, right?
You know, there may be plenty of room at the bottom, as Feynman used to say, but
yes.
Is there really? Is it that much? I don't know, man.
I don't think so. I think there are...
It gets exponentially
more difficult.
Are companies just doing this because, I mean, are they just doing it because, well, they're running out of things to do, or is there actually value to it? That's kind of my question for it.
Well, both. I mean, they're forced to, because they have to spend money researching new markets. If they don't, somebody else will, and they'll beat them to it if it works. If it doesn't work, well, you know, they're smart, you know, with hindsight, right? We didn't waste money on that process.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that was a dead end. Ah, blind Freddy could see that.
Right.
So
yeah, and they're doing the same thing with chips too. I mean, they're talking about 3D processes and all that other crazy shit.
You've got to take a gamble sometimes. And
what? No, companies don't do that. They don't fund research and development. They just fund development, right?
Right. Yeah. Bastards.
Oh,
but you know, somebody else will. That's always the fear, is that somebody else will, and they'll grab that market, and bam, you're gone. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Look at, like, Kodak just went out of business, right?
I know.
They just went
into bankruptcy.
Filed for, but you know, Yeah.
And their restructuring is a different company, right? I mean, if you look at them 30 years ago versus now, like, they were making technology back then, and now they're a chemical company, basically.
Yeah, well, yeah, and they had like 95% of the camera market, like, for 50 years, right? And they clearly didn't do the right things when digital technology came along, and bam, now they're, you know, they're effectively out of business. They're insignificant. So
yeah, and now they're like a tube manufacturer, right? They're like,
yeah,
it's right. Like, you know, and I think that's a pretty good analog, actually, is that, you know, people still use tube amps, right? I'm actually working on a tube amp right now, and
Luddite.
I know, but like, there's a market for that, but it's just a sliver, just a tiny little market, you know, it's not that
but
big.
But there's a niche for everything, that's
right?
The thing,
exactly,
you know?
and that's the reality these days, right? I mean,
yep.
It benefits us in many ways, as in there's open source hardware and there's Etsy.com and all that other crazy stuff that's out there.
Somebody tweeted the other day that no matter how – sorry, I forget who. But no matter how shit your product is, there's a niche for it.
even the shonky products, so right? I mean, like, someone's buying it, obviously. Someone wants to feel
you
good.
You might get 10 people to buy it, but it's, you know, it's...
And times $3,000, I mean, that's 30 grand.
Yeah, that's right. Unbelievable.
Yeah. They're running out of things.
There is a... someone called Aurora from the forum. He pointed out a 500-page... PDF book on analog circuit design, and it looks pretty darn impressive. I've got to say.
Because actually, Hans Kamensind, the 555 guy, he actually did one, but I think I've seen this one before too. Yeah, this is great.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen this one before. It's called Analog Secrets, as in SEEKRETS.
Yeah,
groan. Okay, DC to daylight is the tagline, you know.
Yeah.
So, Analog Secrets, a masterclass in analog design by Leslie Green. And apparently he comes from, where did he used to work? He used to work at, design in 7.5-digit meters at Dartron Instruments. So, you know, really sort of bleeding edge, you know, low signal level stuff. So I'm sure he knows his stuff in the analog domain.
I think that's when I found it when I was working at Keithley. I was looking for stuff like this. And
I'm sure you would have come across it. So yeah, he used to work on stuff like that. And this is a real shame because he, how much effort goes, how many years of your life, you know, years, not just 1 year, I'm sure it was multiple years of his life went into writing this book. He found a UK publisher. This is on his website, and apparently they've just discontinued it because due to lack of sales, the publisher discontinued it because UK students now don't have grants and they have too high a fees for their courses that they can't afford to buy the book anymore. So apparently they used to get grants or something, and now they don't, and now nobody can afford to buy this book because it's 500 pages, so it's, you know, it's a monster of a book.
And, and publishing
and
in general.
And these textbooks are expensive. You know,
they're always
100
plus.
It's nothing to pay over $100
right?
for a textbook. So
yeah, I was talking to someone about how they – or someone I mentioned last week, actually. It was when they were we were talking about the art of computer programming, right? And someone asked, I can't believe you don't have that. I think it's Adam who said that.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, I don't program that much, and I can't afford those books.
Yeah, exactly.
If I could have found one on campus somewhere, you know, like, or at a book sale.
I was going through eBay the other day, and for some reason I ended up on these medical textbooks. It's like, you know, you're surfing Wikipedia and you end up, you know, in a few clicks you end
the
up
the dark corner,
you
know, of Wikipedia.
Exactly. And these textbooks, even used, were like $300-$400 because they're so specialized in this medical field. You know, if you're doing your, you know, if becoming a doctor and you've got to buy your textbook for these textbooks are $300-$500 because they're so niche. They only print like 1,000 of them worldwide or something, and they're so big and complicated that they must have, so they can charge anything they like, and that's how much, you know, they do charge.
Yeah,
like a wounded bull in a China shop.
What? Oh, charge. Got it.
Charge. Yeah.
Charge.
Charge.
Yeah. China shop. Happy New Year.
Can you say it again?
I've totally forgot. I was trying to think, and I'm like, nope, it's gone.
Not right. You trained yourself. I heard you at the start practicing.
I probably said it about 100 times trying to say it.
So. Right. Okay.
Yep. I'm not good with languages. Speaking of books, actually, one of my favorite authors, or one of my favorite books, actually, in analog, is by Sergio Franco. He's a UCSF professor, right. And there's this great book on op amps he wrote called crap, it's not with me. but anyways, he just finished a new book, and he actually and someone online told me about it because I had been interested in his other book, and basically he printed it in a spiral bound version for his students to keep it cheap, and it's still $75 on Amazon.
yeah,
that's like ugh. So
that's
one's actually
a cheap version. That's right.
Yeah, and so this is actually about discrete design. So if you're interested in you know how like they always talk about like
transistors and
analog circuit designers, like chip designers. If you want to make a crap ton of money, this is how you do it. And buy this book and
learn how to do current mirrors and transistor current mirrors and constant current sources and roll in that 10 different ways with a handful of transistors, and then figuring out all the physics behind it.
Yes,
and then how to put it on a bit of silicon,
tiny bit of sand.
With a whole lot of magic dust thrown in.
Yep. Some wide lar current mirrors, right?
Isn't that right, one of them? Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of, actually, I was poking around
any
the bookshelf.
Any idiot can count to one.
Yeah, that's right. Huh? Not me. I was poking around the bookshelf at work, and I found a gem. It was awesome. I found...
Why didn't you tweet a photo of it?
My camera's broken on my phone, actually. I need to get a low-cost
phone.
You
need to get one of these $150 smartphones.
Yeah, I do.
With
I need
a
to go
shit
over to the
camera,
store.
But at least it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I found a 1987 Linear Technology Application Handbook. And I'm like, 87, that sounds about right. And I open it up, and it's AppNote 1 through AppNote 21. It was awesome. it was like finding a diamond. It was awesome.
Hallelujah.
So like out of that 21, I think 19 of those are Jim Williams app notes.
Right.
And one is Bob Weidlar, and one is some other guy. I didn't recognize his name.
Right.
So
disappeared into obscurity.
Oh, I'm sure he's still there. Come on. Right. These guys are long term,
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
These guys are hardcore. That's right.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of Jim Williams, we have had a note on here for a while. This guy, Kent Lundberg, he's a MIT professor. And he's kind of going through, I think it's since Jim Williams died, but he actually started a blog called readingjimwilliams.blogspot.com. And he's going through and reading every app note and writing about them. He just wrote one today, actually, on app note 85. And it's this really great in-depth look at each app note and, the link to it. And it's great. If people ever...
That's unusual that you could actually discuss an app note, because an app note is designed to discuss the thing it's talking about in a clear way. So this is commentary on the app note.
Yeah.
Or is it a different way to present the information, or is it, what is the style of the...
It's like a true
commentary
blog style. Actually, it's Dr. Analog on Twitter, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's great, though. I mean, it's great. It's kind of fun to follow along.
You could sell that Twitter name.
You could. I guess so.
There's got to be a whole $20 in that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So yeah, it's fun. It's fun to follow along. So if people out there are analog folk, check it out.
Do we have any? We completely missed shout outs or anything like that today. Do we have any of those? I don't think so.
No, we talked about some of it, but no, not really. We've had some suggestions from. We should clear out our list. This can be our yard sale of a episode.
Right. Okay. Last 7 minutes we've got left. Oh, yeah. By the way, we have a new server. We're now on libsyn.
Oh yeah.
Libsyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should not have any download issues now because the MP3 file is hosted on this cloud server.
Yeah. So location, right? It's distributed.
It's a CDN, that's the word. It's a content delivery network. So, so the file is now automatically hosted on multiple servers around the world, and you automatically download from the one nearest to you, and you don't even realize it. So, rather than before the file was on one server, and then when, you know, 3,000 people try and download it at once, it just dies and falls over.
Crappy server.
Yeah.
So, and that is all thank you to our donors, which we love and appreciate. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. People have been donating. And the money goes towards that. So,
And other things that we're working on. So
And fortunately or unfortunately, we get a free app with that. Would you like a free app with that, sir?
Yeah.
And I haven't tried it, but apparently we can set up our own app for the show.
Well, we should be more clear about it. People would have to pay $1.99.
They would have to pay. It's $1.99, and we would get 50% cut of that. So it's a way to donate to the show almost.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to try it out just to,
I mean,
just to see what it's like. And if it's shit, well, we'll tell you it's shit. But if it's good, we'll actually promote it. So
yeah, it's a cool thing to say, like, oh, we have an app. But then it's like, and 50 people use it, and they're all unhappy with it because we don't keep it up.
You had 50 people try it once, you know?
Right,
and
they exactly.
Because it was crap, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, anyways, Libsyn's good. So if there's any other problems with the... I don't know. We might look at other server stuff just for the WordPress, but
The WordPress doesn't get much traffic, so our shared server should be able to handle that for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and thanks to Alan for helping us. Alan Garfield.
Thank you very much, Alan.
IT guru.
He's our penguin.
That's right.
He's our penguin man. And so it's, you know, it'll allow us to do a lot of stuff in the future, hopefully, with the show. It can transcode into different formats, and heaven forbid it can insert advertising. That's if we found someone silly enough to want us to actually give us money to.
Blab.
So we can be bored.
We can.
It allows us to do all sorts of stuff like that. So in theory, you could download, you know, we could upload a super high... high audio quality version, then it can automatically transcode into different formats based on what sort of bandwidth connection you've got and things like that. It's fairly smart.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, so I have a fun thing on this list for the last couple minutes.
All right.
It's just going to be a quick mention, actually, because it's a visual thing, so people have to click over. But I found it actually from Matt Inks on Twitter. It's like these science stock photos. Have you ever seen these before?
No.
There's always these ridiculous... I mean, stock photos in general, pretty ridiculous, right?
Oh, right, okay.
Whenever I see one, I love calling it out. Like, just being like, you know, like company literature, they always love doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But these are science-y stock photos. And it's just like picture after picture of people... holding test tubes. People not wearing clothes for some reason. Like,
right.
It's ridiculous.
Always different types of people. There's hot
very
chick.
Diverse.
There's a very smart looking chick with glasses, and there's a black person, and there's an Asian person, and there's a guy with a gray beard, and there'll be all the stereotypes, all the ridiculous. Yes.
Right. And my favorite is the second to last, which is a very attractive young lady wearing protective goggles for some reason with a multimeter measuring a MacBook Pro. It's just like, no, come on, guys.
I can see that. Oh, that's bad. Come on. Oh, no. Are these almost look like joke photos.
I know, right?
Yeah,
it's just
they're
so clueless that...
Yeah.
You know, they're like, they're so tan and attractive. And there's the one above it,
and
they're looking at a chicken.
Funny faces. And...
Yeah, exactly. You know, like. So definitely worth the look. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Shonky photos of the week, right?
Yeah, right. Some of them are fun, I've got to admit.
I mean, they're good.
But... You know, but there's a naked chick holding a test tube, you know.
Yeah.
Like a beaker filled with some blue liquid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, works for me. I don't know about you. But...
Don't tell the wife.
Right. Yeah. And there's a chick with a lab coat unbuttoned, you know, and the... Yeah. Okay. Let's not say anymore.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
So last suggestion of the day, actually bring it back to PCBs, which we were talking about at the beginning of the episode. Brad Leister wrote in about this. There is a... I'm not sure about the site name. It's called meetandnetworking.com.
Okay, this sounds like
I don't know where that comes from, but yeah. But basically, it's a tutorial on KiCad and how to actually create your own laser cut stencils, which is pretty cool. I mean,
awesome.
I think KiCad actually naturally outputs the stencils as a you know, part of its output files. But then taking that and then sending it over to a laser cutter, not bad, right? I mean, like, you can do cardboard.
Well, any package does that. It outputs a paste layer. It's just a solder paste layer.
Yeah, because that's part of the package, package layout, right?
Yep.
And so you can take this and then actually send it to a laser cutter, and I think you do like a SVG, which is like a, I think, isn't that like a vector format or something like that?
Yes, it's a vector, based format, which is what Gerber is. Gerber is a vector based format, so everything has to be lines. It's not like Gerber can, you know, you render. I mentioned this in my previous. In my video I shot last night, actually.
In your déjà vu video?
In my déjà vu video. I mentioned somewhere in the hour in there that, Gerbers generate things as lines. It's not like you can render fonts inside a Gerber file.
Right, you know,
it
render
will,
lines
it
look
transfer
like
it to vectors, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yep. And, and any PCB package must be able to output a paste file exactly like that, but outputting in an SVG, I guess, is a, you know, in a suitable file that then can go into a laser printer. That's the key. So,
yeah, and there's always that same thing of, you know, like, you have to be at a certain point where you really want to use a solder stencil like that. You know, like, there's probably. Yeah. I think it's nice because some of the paid services now, they'll just send you the stencil.
Send you them for free because they with your board because they
they're
laser
using them
cut them out of Mylar these days. They're so cheap. They churn them out in 10 seconds and they're practically giving them away.
Right. So that's a nice – I mean, it's a nice thing to have for sure. I mean, it's a lot easier than squirting out little bits of solder paste unless you're unless you have one of those fancy machines that does it for you, all integrated. Yeah. But
but I'm happy to, you know, sit there and solder my prototype board. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like a rite of passage for your prototype. You've got to hand solder it,
for a
prototype, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you know how I got these boards and they turned up super quick, right? Yeah. I'd like to make a complaint. They turned up too darn quick. Because I was going to order some parts today. I thought I had like a couple of days spare. So I was going to order some parts today so that they turn up tomorrow so I'd have them when the boards arrive. But the boards turned up this morning, damn it, and I'm parts short. So,
hate just pop
it. So
on down to your local electronics shop. Don't you guys have
those? I'm going to have to make a run to Farnell's today. So,
there you go. So, see, you have that. I mean, I don't have that here, man. The best I could. I mean, I've got a surplus supply store in Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Wait, you don't have like a. Oh, I get. Yeah, well, it's not like you're going to have a DigiKey or Mouser or something, right? They're a centralized thing.
Yeah, they're all in Thief River Falls.
Well, I'm in Sydney, so I do have a Farnell's. I have an RS Components, and then we've got JCar and Altronics.
So you just go to the distribution center, basically, and you're
I go to the distribution center, and well, you order it before, and then it takes them half an hour to pack it for you, and then you arrive at the tray counter and you pick it up from the tray counter instead of getting it posted. So
So it's like if I lived in Thief River Falls and.
I don't know if DigiKey offer a tray counter. Don't quote me on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but certainly Farnell and RS in
I'm sure the
here,
population there doesn't really play to their benefit, you know?
No, so, you know. What? Well, I've got to get off my couch and...
Yeah, that's true. Get going, man.
Yeah. I know. So,
lazy Aussies.
So I've got to get parts, and this is my new power supply. I'm quite excited. I've already got a few revisions that I want to do, but anyway, this one will be close enough that I can build up, and I've scrapped my ones from IT Studios. They're no good. They took a month to get here, and by the time they took 5 weeks to get here, I'd already figured, oh, no, I want to change things, and well, there was no point building it up. I got them like a week ago, but...
isn't that crazy how you can, like, you'll send it off and then you'll be, you know, you'll just be crunching on it. You'll, like, stand in the shower, like, thinking about it.
And
you
go,
I forgot this, you know.
I forgot this and I want to add this feature. Oh, that'd be nice, you know. Yeah, I'll do that instead. Or
I wish there was some kind of, like, meditation technique that allowed you to kind of compress all that into, like an hour, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be nice.
Getting boards right on the first spin is an art.
Yeah. Well,
especially when it's your own project and you're developing it as you go along. And
right, yeah.
And we've talked about it before. You can't check your own stuff, and you.
And
always,
if boards are cheap too, then there's not as much incentive, right? If boards are $1,000, then
That's right. It's a big difference. And when I was a boy, we didn't have. You couldn't get a cheap board like this. It was unheard of for a hobbyist to get a professionally made board. They were thousands of dollars if you wanted to get one made. And this was up until probably the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I would say, you know, maybe mid-90s.
Yeah, and I knew engineers who would insist on having everything right. And it's like, come on, man, it's cheaper to just spin the board a couple times because we know it's going to happen anyways. It's better that than spend 2 months and then have to spin the board another 2 months later. So it's kind of a mindset thing now, too. So it's hopefully it doesn't go back the other direction because a lot of younger engineers would be screwed. Yeah.
And I we've talked about it before, I'm sure, but it's so important to have something in your hands.
Yeah.
You know, like you can have your circuit board on the screen, you've got your 3D model and you've got all that, but nothing beats actually building the damn thing up and having a board and having a go at it.
Thank you so much. Now I have an excuse to link in my article from this weekend. You are just the nicest guy.
I am. That's just me.
Ah, you are. All right, we should get going. It's getting there.
Yeah, we're 5 minutes past.
We're low
on our capacity, and I've got to race off to get some parts.
Go
if they're in
parts.
Stock. Will I get... thwarted by Murphy again. they won't have the chip I need.
No, I hope not.
Guarantee you. Oh, yeah, it's in stock, but it's in our Singapore warehouse, you know?
Yeah,
thanks a lot. Anyway, can't complain. At least I'm based in Sydney where their main warehouse is for Farnell and RS, so...
Yeah, if you're based in Boston, I would tell you, go off to J-Car and get some parts.
That sounded New Zealand, which is very apt for today's show.
Yeah, there you go. Well, don't ask those guys either.
Oh, boy.
All right, guys. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya. We stayed on topic for like half an hour.
And we talked about electronics.
Yeah, we did. It was all,
crazy.